pieces, by the way, in this whole thing. We're going to start with a quiz. This is nothing to be nervous about, ladies, because it doesn't matter if you get it right or not, because I'm going to give you the answers at the end. You might know it all, and you might not. Page 12, it's just true, false. Feel free to cheat if you need to ask somebody else. And it's really just about our facility. So go ahead and pull down and do the book, page 12. Does anyone need a pen? I'm going to give you about 3 minutes. True call. Okay. Do you work? Do I have to turn it on? It's got batteries. I plugged it in. Okay. I plugged it in. Do you have an idea what I might be doing wrong on this? I plugged it in. It says plug it in, right? Mm-hmm. Plug the stupid thing in. And it's not working.
Ah, there's an on.
Thank you. Blind.
Did you see where those were? They were right there.
Oh, they're all right there.
I know.
I'm sorry, we're blind. It's a library. It's a pile of books, right?
I know, Vincent's like, pile of books. I'm like, what pile of books? We're surrounded by books.
Thank you. He said they were up here, so I do have to trust him. You guys pretty well done? You ready for the answers? Yeah, so number one is false. Number two is false. It's correct if it's wrong on there, and there's no grade. Number three is true. Number four is true. Number five is true, and number six is true. Number seven is false. Number eight is false. Number nine is true, and number 10 is false. Anyone get 100? Yeah! Woo! Okay, if you did not get 100, it's perfectly fine. Because we're going to talk about all this during this next presentation about our fertility. So just relax and enjoy the process of learning how you were born. Now, this is not going to be news to most of you girls. It just might be seen as presented in a slightly different way through, of course, our Catholic faith lens. Okay? And there might be some information that your classes skipped. So, okay, so this is a picture on the, can I see it on here? I can, good, so I don't have to like stand over there. The ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, it depicts God creating Adam. Okay, does this work? Can you see red? Oh, look, can you see the red? Oh, this is great. Can you?
Yes.
I can't. Where is it?
It's down.
How blind am I?
I can't see that anymore.
Down, bottom.
We can see it.
Go up.
What do
there
I
you
mean?
Go. Let's work that fingers now. Good.
Can't see
go
it.
Up. Go up by the hands.
Somebody else.
You would really see it?
Yes. Yeah.
I
can
see it. But all of y'all can see it.
Yes.
No. Oh, good. Some other blind people. Okay, I don't think I'm going to use the pointer because... Maybe you could hold it. Can you, like, hold it and see? Go, like, go over there.
Is it this
one? Yeah, the red on the top. Can you see?
It's down about the lower.
Oh, you know, I bet you can... Yeah, you can only... Can you see it on the floor, Jeannie?
Yes, I can see it on the floor.
I can see it on the floor!
Yeah, but look, when it goes up here... It disappears.
Yeah.
It was on there.
You can kind of see it, but it's subtle.
See it? Yeah. I think it's the angle.
I've used this before, and I could see... Never mind. I'm not going to use this. That's just too much for me. Where was I? Okay. We're at the Sistine Chapel. You're just going to have to guess. This is Adam. That's God. And then encircled in God's arm is Eve. Okay? That's a depiction of Eve. And behind her, those little cherub-looking things are depicted as... Heard the children that come from that marriage. And you know, whether creation happened this way or not is not important to us today. What is important is that God's first command to Adam and Eve was to leave, cleave, multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. God's vision of love and sex, God's vision of sex is love and life, right, within the marriage covenant. So I'm going the wrong way. Excellent. So the church asks each of us to come to know ourselves. You know, we are fearfully and wonderfully made, right? So when we get to know how our bodies work and come to know our sexual powers, it should lead us into respecting and being able to love others. Think about it. Knowledge of our sexuality should lead every young woman to think of a man as a beautiful image of God, made to be loved and not used. And every man should see a woman as an image of God, made to be loved and not used. Now, most young people become aware of their sexual powers around the age of puberty. That's when those bodily changes from a little girl to a woman start taking place. Usually that's between 10 and 13, usually earlier in girls than in boys. Puberty has certainly begun for at least the vast majority of girls in this room today, so you're familiar. Now, puberty begins in the brain. The brain is the boss of the reproductive system. In both males and females, they secrete those same two hormones, it's luteinizing hormone and FSH, which is follicle-stimulating hormone. You don't have to know the names of the hormones. It's those same two. They come out of the pituitary, and they stimulate the sex glands in the male and the female to start having them grow up. Okay, that's when puberty starts. In the male, it goes to the testes, where it starts to produce sperm. The testes starts to produce sperm. That's man's contribution to new life. It also starts excreting testosterone and androgen, which are the characteristics that turn a little boy into a man, which, you know, that we know what that is. They have their growth spurt. They have their shoulders get nice and wide. They get that nice triangle shape, right? Their voice starts to change, and they start to grow hair in different places. You know the difference between a boy and a man. In a girl, it stimulates the ovaries to start producing estrogen and progesterone to start maturing our egg cells. Our egg cell is, of course, our contribution to new life, one of them, because, you know, we do house new life also. But that's our contribution to the new baby. And starts our feminine characteristics, right, from a little girl to a woman, and you're very well aware of those changes. Our voice also changes, not so much as the man, but we end up with wider hips, get curvier, our breasts start to develop, we get hair in other places, and, of course, our menstrual period starts. These also control our menstrual flow. So, I guess it's changing. You just tell me if it's the wrong slide. So this is how our hormones work differently in men and women. Now take a look. Steady Freddy, as soon as he hits puberty, bang, they're off to the races, and it's steady from then on out. Sometimes boys hit puberty, and it hits them just like a ton of bricks. We have unpleasant things when it hits us, and they have unpleasant things when it hits them, right? Now this is Miss Roller Coaster. Now Miss Roller Coaster, these lines represent the ups and downs of the hormones during one menstrual cycle. Do you see the ride we're on? Do you know why maybe you're in different moods at different times during the day? Yeah, this is why, okay? That plays out for us every menstrual cycle, which is about 30 days. Did I go back the wrong way? Do I not know how to use this? I went back the wrong way. So in males, okay, because these hormones are secreted at the same level throughout his life, we can call him Constant Carl. That means they're constantly able to father a child. Once a man hits puberty to the time he dies, he is developing sperm cells in the hundreds of thousands of them every day, and his fertility is constant. Any day he can father a child. Now, the other picture is a microscopic picture of the sperm cells, which is a very funny but very important piece of the puzzle. It's one of the very important cells in a man's body. I know it looks like a tadpole. God has a sense of humor. All of the genetic material or the recipe for the baby, right, is in the little head. The tail, of course, helps it swim toward the egg so it can conceive. It's the smallest cell in the human body. It only has 26 chromosomes. It dies within hours if it's not in a favorable environment, but it is necessary for the procreation of new life. Now, these sperm cells live in the male's reproductive system. Now, if you've ever babysat a little boy or changed a little boy's diaper, you already know that the male's reproductive system is located mostly on the outside of his body. And although I find that a little bit funny, there is a good reason for that. Sperm need under, they can't be at regular body temperature in order to develop properly. It needs to be a little cooler. So God put it on the outside of his body in the testes, which are the little sac, the scrotum hangs down, the testes are here. That's where sperm is created and stored. It's stored in the epididymis, which is right over here, until released from the body. When the sperm, by the way, sperm take like 8 to 10 days, right, to develop. So they develop, they store in here. When it's time for them to move, exit the body, they go through all these tubes called the vas deferens. As they go by, they go through some other glands, they pass the Cowper's, they pass the prostate gland, and then they secrete this fluid in with the sperm, and the fluid with this sperm is called semen. If you've heard of seminal fluid, the seminal fluid mixes with that and it becomes semen. The way the male's body gets ready to release the sperm is the penis, which is made up of a spongy type muscle material, actually fills up with blood, and it makes it a little bit more firm and firm and long, I guess, firmer and longer, and that's called an erection, okay? And when the sperm leave the body, the term for that is an ejaculation. Each ejaculation can contain up to 500 million sperm cells. You know, the men are made pretty fantastically by God, and they're very necessary, of course, in our love and life, all our relationships. Now, women, on contrary to men, in contrast to men, we have cyclic fertility, which means our fertility comes and go. Like they show you cycling Carla, because our fertility is like a piece of the bike wheel and it comes around and around. So we're called cycling Carla. Our menstrual cycle starts on the first day of our period, okay, and it ends the last day before our next period, and that is usually about 30 days. It can be longer or shorter, and women are only fertile between 6 and 10 days in each cycle. Now, again, in contrast to men, our reproductive system is cradled really on the inside of our pelvis. It's all on the inside, protected by our pelvis, kind of like a baby cradle, okay? We have the ovaries, which produce and they don't produce, actually. They just mature because we're born with all the eggs we're ever going to have. We just need to mature them. That is what releases our eggs. The fallopian tubes are where the eggs are scooped up and brought into the inside of the uterus. Our uterus is also known as something that's in a common prayer, the fruit of Mary's womb. That's another word for uterus. I want you to think about it at this point because I know you've probably seen all this before. But that makes your womb a very holy place, okay? Mary's womb was holy. It held the Son of God. Our wombs are holy because they hold the potential for our children. And your mom knows, if she's in here, that you were definitely a holy blessing to her. So think about that when you think about uterus or womb. It's definitely a holy place. The inside of the uterus, there's an inside lining. It's called the endometrium. It plays a big role in our cycle, and I'll talk about that in just a second. It's kind of like the baby blanket where the baby kind of snugs in there and starts its life once it gets down there. What have I missed? No. Ovary, fallopian tube, uterus, inside of the uterus. The neck of the uterus. The cervix is the opening from the bottom of the womb to the outside of the body. The cervix right here, which means neck, in Latin, contains a few little specialized cell sections called crypts that secrete a very special kind of mucus. Now look, this is very important for fertility, this mucus. I wouldn't have named it mucus, okay? Mucus is what comes out of your nose, like when you have a cold. It's not like that, okay? It's a type of fluid that's very important to our fertility, and we'll talk about that in detail in a minute, but they call it mucus, so I have to call it that. The outside entrance to the outside from the womb to the outside of the body is called the vagina. It's also called the birth canal because that's how the baby gets out into the world. And that's all the pieces, so I don't have to go over any more terminology. And for a lot of you guys, that terminology is not going to be particularly new. Now, externally, the female has several important genital structures as well. The labia, which means lips, provide the outside of these structures. The interior, it's way on the other side. I'm not going to be able to see it. The exterior labia is the part of your vaginal area that has hair on it that protects the outside. The inside is a little more sensitive. You have the urethral opening where we excrete urine. And we have another opening, and that's the vagina. And then if you go to the third opening, you're at the anus. That's all they want me to go over on that one for you. Now, sexual intercourse takes place in the vagina when the man inserts his erect penis inside of her vagina and deposits his sperm. Okay? This is designed to be a loving act between husband and wife where the husband gives himself fully to his wife, mind, heart, and body, right? And we're made to receive that gift in order to give ourselves to our husbands fully, mind, heart, and body. It is sexual intercourse is also rightly called the marital act because it's meant to be a renewal of the wedding vows when we said that we would love each other freely, fully, fruitfully, forever, and faithfully. It's such a powerful act that when this happens, you might have to name another person 9 months later. It's a very powerful thing. Now, it's important to note at this time that even though God made this to be a loving action between a husband and a wife, it doesn't always happen that way. And even if we come into existence in not this ideal and special way, God loved each of us into creation. Each of us are loved, wanted, very special, and of course has a purpose, and God has a plan for each of our lives. Unrepeatable, unique, and really precious is what we are to God. So the ovary, now they're going back to the ovary, okay? And they want you to know that the ovary really is a fantastic organ. It's really cool. So the woman is born with all the eggs she'll ever need, really more than she'll ever need. She's born with about 500,000, and during her fertile years, she develops and matures about 500, okay? Usually only one egg is selected each menstrual cycle to mature. And there's a picture of that, right? Yes. So here's our little eggs, okay? And it's maturing under the influence of estrogen. It matures and it gets bigger and bigger. And then when it gets big and all that, it goes pop. It pops right out of the ovary. Some people can actually feel this. I have my oldest daughter. She is so body aware. It's really scary. She can feel not only her ovulation, sometimes it's like a little pinch. She can feel what side it's on. Yes, it's crazy. Some people can feel it. I can't feel it. You might not be able to feel it. Sometimes it might feel like a little pain in your side for a little while, a couple hours during the day. But it pops out, and then the fimbria, which is your little finger-like projections on the fallopian tube, scoop it up and bring it up into the uterus. Now, if after ovulation, under the influence of progesterone, okay, the little cavity or the little follicle that the egg was in turns into the yellow body. It's called the corpus luteum, which literally means yellow body. That's what it must look like under a microscope. It starts to produce that progesterone, shrinks up, and if there's no pregnancy, that starts again. Okay, the process starts again. Okay, so Jeannie, that's great. When does ovulation occur? Well, this is what science knows for sure. So the woman's cycle begins with her menstrual period. That's the red part, okay? Here's ovulation, these little lines. See that there are different times, all right? And then you've got the blue section, which is your after ovulation section, which usually lasts between 11 and 15 days. So when did you ovulate? You ovulated 11 to 15 days before the first day of your next period. So you can count backwards and tell, even if you can't feel it. Now, this, I can't see this from this side. Okay, this one shows like, this one's pretty even, so that's about a 28-day cycle, right? Because some people think, oh, you ovulate on day 14 because it's in the middle of the cycle, and then you have 14 days until you have your period. Well, if you always have 28-day cycles, it is possible that you will ovulate always on day 14. But I don't know many women who have exactly the same day cycles every single month of their life for their entire life. And some people have longer cycles naturally. Some people have shorter cycles naturally. So you really can only tell ovulation for sure by going backwards from the time that you start your period. Okay. This is a picture of two things. It's the endometrial lining, and it's following the progression of the egg. Okay. So your egg is growing, growing, growing. Oh, no, we're not growing yet. Let's go back to the menses. So we're having our period. Our eggs are not very mature at this time. We're just starting a new cycle, so it starts to mature. Okay, so it starts to mature. As it matures, your endometrial tissue builds up. So in case there's a pregnancy, we're going to have, you know, they're going to have a possibility of life here. You see, ovulation is here, the little line that goes down, and then it all kicks loose. Progesterone kicks loose, everything gets specialized, it gets ready, your uterus is ready, blah, 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 blah. Are we going to have an implantation? Are we going to have new life? And as you can see, this didn't happen this time, and it starts over. The stuff that builds up in your endometrial lining is the stuff of your period, okay? And then it starts over thin. And raises it again. You don't need that baby blanket in there if you don't have conception taking place, so you start over. Okay, these are the crypts we talked about before with the mucus, which I would call something else, something more positive. So the crypt is just the neck. You've got the, it goes down into the neck and the fundus, and then you've got the vagina. It's right there in the very middle. If you reach really far back with your fingers, sometimes you can touch the tip of your cervix. I wouldn't really recommend it unless you need to do that for some reason, but some people need to do that for health reasons, but it's that far back, like your whole, it's back pretty much almost to your whole hand, okay? This cervix has two types of cervical mucus that happen in here, which is actually pretty cool. So right before ovulation, okay, you have what's called fertile mucus. They call it estrogen-type mucus on this slide. And as you can see, this is going to be a loosely aligned type of mucus, and it actually helps the sperm, see the little places that the sperm is, it helps them swim to the egg. It's very slick and thinner, and you might actually observe this on the outside of your body, like when you wipe, when you go to the bathroom, if you see like an egg white shiny, or you feel really slippery, okay, that could be actually be this type of mucus, and it's very natural to feel that, and sometimes we don't feel that. Sometimes we have what's called a strong mucus sign, and sometimes we don't, so you may feel that or you may not. Now, once you ovulate, okay, the progesterone starts getting developed, and the mucus dries up and becomes like a plug, like this type of mucus over here. Now, that stays way up in the cervix, so you're not going to feel that on the outside of your body. And as you can see, it blocks the sperm from getting in, okay, because your fertile time is done, so your body doesn't want anything to do with it. And you don't feel that, like I said, at the outside. Now, after ovulation, if I get there, okay, good. After ovulation, I already told you that. Ovulation only occurs one time, usually, in each menstrual cycle. Like, you're not going to ovulate today and then 3 days later ovulate again, okay? Now, every once in a while, within the usually 24-hour period, you could throw two eggs or you could have two eggs come out of your ovaries, all right? If you have two eggs come out and they get fertilized, what does that make? Twins. And what type of twins would that be? Do you know? Fraternal, because you've got two eggs. Identical twins come from one egg and one sperm and then splitting during the process. Okay, one sperm per egg, fraternal, one egg, one sperm split is identical. Oh, and there's something else on here too about the egg, right? So our eggs only live 12 to 24 hours. Once they're ovulated. Now, think about that. If we only had one day every 30 days or so that we could possibly get pregnant, most of us would not be here, right? That's pretty good timing, pretty rare. So that's what the mucus does. The mucus extends our fertility. Instead of being fertile only the 12 to 24 hours, we're fertile up to 10 days because sperm need mucus to survive. We already said they die within hours without favorable mucus. And when I mean favorable, I mean that estrogen type that allows it to swim and stuff like that. So our fertility depends on the sperm and the egg, which we're used to hearing about, and also the mucus, which some of us aren't taught about. In fact, this fertile mucus is so efficient and effective that if you have it on the outside of your body, you know, say you can feel it when it's coming out, and you don't even have full sexual intercourse, if you have genital contact, you can still get pregnant. That sperm can swim all the way up, all the way to the egg. And science has proved that, and I actually have a nephew that was conceived that way. He's a nephew-in-law, but still, he's almost a grown-up now. Okay, our fertility is it's amazing, but it's complicated, okay? So if we get a hold on our cycle and how that works, it helps keep us a little bit clearer. And Mother Teresa used this image with who she worked with in Calcutta to help those ladies space their pregnancies if they possibly could. And so she talked about the seasons of the year, so that helps us. So I'm from South Carolina, but I'm assuming in the fall here, your trees lose the leaves, right? Except pine trees, right? Okay, that's the fall. The leaves are falling. That's the fall of our cycle. So that would be like our menses when we're bleeding, okay? So we're sloughing out the endometrium. That's the fall of our cycle, and that's when it starts. So it starts in fall. After a few days of that, we have the cold, dry days of winter. Now, in winter, do you grow a garden here outside? Good. We don't do that in South Carolina either. This is when your eggs are just starting to develop, and it's a phase of infertility for us. You're not going to feel any of that mucus on the outside. It's a dry time. Then after winter comes the spring, right? April showers bring May flowers. Have you heard of that? So that's when we're fertile. Our fertile time has come. We've ovulated. We might be able to feel the mucus on the outside of our body. That's the time to conceive. Now, if we conceive or not conceive, we then go into the hotter days of summer. Do you know that when we conceive, our body temperature goes up just a little bit and stays up the entire time we have a baby cooking? When we're an oven, we really are kind of an oven. Yeah, do you agree? Do you agree? She said, I remember it. Okay, and if we do not conceive during that time, okay, our body temperature will stay up actually for just those 15 days, and it knows, oh, look, we don't have a baby here. We don't need this lining anymore. So then your period starts over. So if you look at it, you've got a few days of bleeding, you know what, 5 to 7, right, 3 to 7 sometimes. You've got a few dry days, about 5 days, 3 to 5 days of that. You've got about 10 days of fertility this spring, and then you've got 11 to 14 days, and then your month is up and you start over, okay? I hope that makes a little more sense for you. Na-na. What did they not know? Okay, so fertility. You know, fertility is a simple word, but it's a big gift because when we use our fertility, our powers of fertility, we're making a new person. I mean, that is pretty darn cool, a new image of God. This is a combined person of a man and a woman, a husband and his wife. They co-create with God. They come together and they have a new image of God. Images of God live forever. Was there created? They live forever. They have true worth. They're worth the same as us, right? And they're beloved by God. So it's a really nice gift. If you talk to your moms, they'll say it is pretty darn cool to be a mom. Probably the best gift we've been given is our daughters and sons, except maybe the gift of life that God gave us to start with. Very, very powerful. So this is your first baby picture. The sperm of your dad meets the egg of your mom. They unite, and you were created. They both come with 23 chromosomes each. The egg has 23. The sperm has 23. 46 chromosomes that come together for you are your individual, unrepeatable, beautiful self, okay? Every human being begins in this miraculous way, and at this time, you are not just a potential human being. but you are a human being with great potential. So the miracle happens, egg meets sperm, they unite, God breathes life into the new person, you're ready to go. Do you know that you're a sexual person from the very start of your conception? Because a female egg only carries an X chromosome, okay? A sperm can carry an X or a Y. So what two letters are we in this room? Do you know? Are we XX or XY? We're XX, because if we had a Y, we would be in the other room, right? Very good. So you can see, like, right from the very beginning, your sex is determined. So no matter how we feel about our identity or how we feel about being a boy or a girl, God loved us into creation as, in this room, a girl, right? We will live all the way through eternity as a girl. And he knew us right from the start. Okay, actually, they say that he knew us before time. He planned us all before time began, before he created the earth. Okay, so this is a traveling egg, okay? So the egg, the one that you just see it actually moving into the uterus. So you've got your egg is ovulated. Here's your ovary, ovulated little leg. Plink, picks it up, la, 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 up it goes. And if it was not fertilized, okay, it would travel up here, and that travel takes about 7 days. And if there was no fertilization when your fertile period ended, it would just be reabsorbed into the body, okay? But look, the sperm is here. They've arrived. Fertilization has occurred. New life has begun right here in the fallopian tube. And then the baby starts to travel down. This is, it shows the baby dividing right into different cells. It's growing as it goes down. Tucks into the uterine lining or the endometrium. There he is, or her, could be her. Implanting in there, getting ready to grow. The baby brings with it the cells to develop its own placenta, its own sac, its own everything once it gets implanted and it starts going. It really is very self-sufficient. Makes its own umbilical cord. It nests in there. It lives in there. Takes over your mom's body. She doesn't have periods anymore. She gets really fat. She gets cranky and tired and her feet swell. And 9 months later, there you are. It was your birthday, and everyone was so excited, right? All, what, 7 pounds, 20 ounces of you, give or take a little bit each way. It was a fabulous day. Now, God had had this plan from the very beginning that man and woman would cleave together and become one flesh and give life to new images of God. And, you know, this is what we call a family, right? And with the gift of fertility, God extends his special invitation to be part of this ongoing creation in this great family of humanity. So it really is a pretty awesome gift. So now no more things that are uncomfortable for a minute. And we're going to play Stump the Sexperts. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to pass around some papers. And if you have a question that you want us to answer, if it's something that you didn't understand on here, I didn't cover clearly, let me know. If it's something else that has to do with family honor, you can ask. Moms, if you have something that you want covered, you can ask. Now, there are a lot of you. We're going to get to as many questions as possible, okay? So, we are not your teachers. We do not know your handwriting. So, this is the instructions for this. Everyone will look like they're writing, whether they have a question or not. You can draw something. You can say, put a smiley face, okay? But look like you're writing and then fold it at least once so no one knows what you put on there. And then it goes in. That way, you don't just see certain people putting it in there. We don't know who asked the questions, right? So that it can be anonymous. Minimize embarrassment as much as possible. Now, moms, are there moms in here with sons in the other room? Okay. Now, they get the same slideshow, okay? I want you to know that. But, you know, we're doing it in a girly way. And they do it in a men are great way, okay? Because they don't want to be told, well, maybe they do want to be told how great women are, but I'm going to tell us how great women are because we're all women. But it's the exact same slideshow. So they got the same facts, they just, you know, beef it up for men. All right? So now he'll know that you know that he knows that, and so you can talk to him about it, much to their chagrin, later on, whenever you feel like it. And they know that they can ask some questions. Does everyone have their papers? Okay. No. Okay, write fast.
Does everyone have papers? Everyone have some? Write it out fast. If you're ready, I'll come around with an envelope. And then when, thank you. When Abigail's done, she will, while I count these up, let's see what we can do to them, she will. You're doing Chastity. She's going to talk to you a little bit more about how to learn how to love well with another definition of Chastity.
So we have talked a bunch about Chastity so far, and so some of this is probably going to be a little bit of a review, but can anyone tell me what Chastity is? Right here.
Being pure in thoughts and actions.
Yeah, that's really good. Any other thoughts? Yeah, so we had at one point, I accidentally lied to y'all earlier. At one point this was in the book. Now it's not in the book. But yes, it's purity in thought, word, and action, and it's demonstrating sexual reverence, respect, and restraint. And chastity, most of all, is a virtue. So we've talked about virtues as good habits. These are things that we practice, and we have to practice them all the time, and the more we practice them, the easier it becomes. So if any of you play sports, it's kind of like that. You know, the more, do you play sport? What do you play?
Volleyball.
So the more you practice, the better you get, right? So it's the same way with all of the virtues and with chastity. It has to do with appreciating and respecting your body, how it's changing, and your new sexual desires and feelings. This slide does not say what this says it's supposed to say. Chastity is for everybody. Now, I mentioned this just briefly when I was talking about the virtues. Chastity is lived out by all of us in whatever context in life that we live in at the time. So as young single people, like myself, I am young and single, we have a very particular way that we live out chastity. And you know that way is, you know, sexual intercourse, as we've been talking about, is meant for, it's suited for, that loving union between a man and a woman, a husband and a wife. But husbands and wives still have to practice chastity, because this is, you know, the virtue of how they respect each other's bodies, and it involves all of those five Fs that we talked about earlier of faithfulness, freedom, forever. You have those in your books. So, you know, we also have nuns and religious, and religious also practice chastity, and they practice it in a total self-gift of themselves to God alone, and so they make vows of celibacy. But all of us have to practice this virtue. Ways to practice this virtue are, there's many ways to practice this, and there's actually a page in your book that has some tips. I don't know what number it is, but it's in there, and that can be good to refer to after this program. The first part is to present yourself as a total person. We've talked about spice. You want to present yourself in all of your spiciness, but not just as one part of yourself, or as I think often happens, as your like sexiness, because there's a lot more to you than that. And so we want to present ourselves as those images of God. Another thing is purity in thought, word, and action, as we have up here. The things that we fill our minds with, the things that we spend our time doing, these change who we are. So, you know, if you are filling your mind by watching you know, TV or reading books with all these stories of really good examples of love that's self-sacrificial and pure, and you're reading and learning about men and women who are really good role models, then all of that's going to be changing you. It's going to be turning you into something very similar. And it's the same thing the other way. You know, if we spend a lot of time, you know, doing things or watching things that we probably shouldn't, it's going to over time change us. So it's important to you know, let your life be filled with those good examples of true love. Another one is to express sexual desire with reverence, respect, and restraint. If you have not already, you will soon be experiencing new desires and stirrings that we call sexual desire. These feelings make you more interested and curious about boys and about becoming a woman. It's going to be a lot more fun to be around boys, and they're going to stop seeming so gross like they probably used to do. And you know, you might start wondering, you know, does this boy like me? Does he think I'm pretty? Those kinds of things. These feelings are all part of God's plan for us, and they're really good. They're part of what makes us human. And the attraction to the opposite sex is that kind of like first spark that leads to us wanting to get married and have families of our own. And living the virtue of chastity means that we know God's plan and that we respect and reverence our bodies and all of the young men that we meet. So that we can all, like, not only are we presenting ourselves and all of our spice, but we're also appreciating that, you know, the men that we meet are also whole persons. So to know chastity is to know love. Having no chastity is to have no love. We believe that everybody has dignity and that our sexuality is a gift. And so our hearts and minds should be oriented towards living out that gift for other people. Jeannie, how are you looking? All righty.
So I'm going to read from the year.
Okay.
I just have a lot of them. There's a lot of biology questions, so I gave you a couple biology questions. Obviously, I was not that clear in my biology, so we are going to get it clear. Are you ready? All right, so there's two that are very related. When does your period end, right? You start your period, but you don't have it your whole life. And when you get your period younger, does that mean that you have it longer? Not usually. So your period ends at a time in your life that's called menopause. You're going to love it. It's like reverse puberty, okay? You kind of feel like you're in puberty again, but you don't get to have babies afterwards, okay? We only have a certain amount of time that we are fertile in our lifetime because, face it, we're not going to be that great at being a parent. If we become a parent at 70, we're not going to have a lot of energy for that baby. It might be a burden for the baby. So anytime between the ages of 40 is a little early, up to 60, it's a very wide range for normal menopause age. You will stop having your cycles regularly, and you will cease to ovulate, so you cease to be able to have children at that time. Usually we have a set span, so like if you start your periods pretty regular at 13, you've got about 30 years. That's about what you've got. So like I had a really weird wonky cycle. I started my first time at 11, didn't get another period till I was 16, which means I'm way old to be having periods, but I'm still having them. So it started later, so it's probably going to end later with me, but it's usually a pretty set time. And oftentimes that time is set by familial genetics. So if you're in a family where you have genetics and you know when the older women in your family hit menopause, you'll probably hit menopause about that same time. Okay, and that was a good question. Now I've got a sperm question. This is really easy, it's really fast. Where do the sperm and egg meet? Do they usually meet inside the uterus? No, they usually meet in the fallopian tube. Those sperm are fast. And somehow God made them to know when that egg is ovulated. So if you have sperm in there and there's ovulation, they race and they go so fast they usually get all the way up to the fallopian tube. That is the normal place. They can meet at different places depending on your medical history and that type of thing. But generally, it's in the fallopian tube.
tampons. This